Hey, welcome to Night School 50, number 50. And today I'm going to be talking about a phrase that came to me about 7.5 years ago. I remember exactly what was going on in my life at the time, and so I can pinpoint it to about 7.5 years ago, and it was an epiphany. And of course, I love to talk about epiphanies these days. My future daughter's name, Epiphany. Beautiful girl. She's just a beautiful girl, Epiphany. But I remember this phrase came to me, and I didn't really understand it when it came to me, but I liked it. It was, preach what you need. And so I sort of had to fill in the blanks of what that meant over the next couple weeks after I heard it, because it stayed in my head, and now and again it still comes back to me, and I think I have an understanding of it. And to me, preaching what you need, well, there's a couple ways I could go about explaining this. First, I will say, when you hear the word preach, especially these days, it automatically has a negative connotation. Oh, he's just preaching. Oh, you just preach into the quiet. You know, there's this negative connotation, like somebody is telling other people how they should live, or even criticizing other people's lifestyles, or telling other people what's real or what's righteous. There's this self-righteous connotation to preaching, and for good reason, of course. I mean, a lot of preaching, especially, you know, religious or ideological preaching, is very critical. It is very negative, but not always. You know, I think there's something about preaching, you know, if you give preaching the benefit of the doubt, I think at best it's someone sharing something with you that they strongly believe, and they hope that maybe you can benefit from it in some way. They're not telling you how to live. They're not telling you how to think. They're not even telling you exactly how you should interpret what it is they're telling you, but they're sharing it anyway. And hopefully they came to that knowledge, whatever it is they're preaching, that idea. Let's just not even call it knowledge. Let's just call it an idea, because I think no matter what you're preaching, essentially you are sharing an idea. And hopefully whoever has that idea came to it through some sort of experience, through some sort of epiphany. I hope that they too have a daughter named Epiphany if they're going to preach. No, but really, I hopefully it came through some sort of process. They're not just sharing something that somebody else told them or that sounded good to somebody else. I mean, they're more than welcome to do that. I'm not going to preach about how other people should preach. But hopefully, ideally, if what they're saying has conviction, it's because it comes from a personal place. If it is the religious preacher who's talking about sin, it would have that much more impact if he himself had sinned, if he brought himself into it. You don't even have to say that you yourself are part of what you're saying, but to know that that's in there, I think you would be able to feel that. That somebody has some greater, you know, experience with whatever it is they are saying. And that's kind of the core idea behind preaching what you need. By saying something meaningful, by sharing a meaningful idea, you are actually communicating something to yourself. If you are sharing something that you think is positive or constructive or better for the world, you are essentially instructing yourself by saying it. And if you're already doing it, if you've already made some sort of good change or positive change, you're reinforcing it by saying it. So again, you're preaching what you need. And we have this tendency when we hear people say things to think they're talking about us, or that they are criticizing us. And it happens even when someone is giving you constructive criticism, even when they frame it in a way that is, you know, entirely constructive, and they do it gently. We have a tendency to take it personally. So when someone says something that's more vague, when someone seems like they're preaching, and they're not directing it at you, let me make that very clear. I don't think that preaching what you need is ever going to be directed at somebody else. I think that they might be the audience, they might be listening, you might be speaking to them, but you are never directing the specifics towards somebody else. Because I think that there's just too strong of a chance that it's going to hurt somebody, or that they're going to take it the wrong way. Not that it even matters. I mean, I think people, you know, we're too afraid of hurting other people. you know, not to say that we should be mean, but I think that sometimes when we have meaningful things to say, sometimes we're too afraid of hurting people's feelings, even when those meaningful things have nothing to do with that person. And the reason why we're so worried about it is because we ourselves, when we hear something, we take it personally. We think somebody is talking to us, directly to us. And I think that's why preachers themselves, true preachers on the pulpit, I think the reason why they can be so impactful to people who are seeking some sort of wisdom or guidance is because they hear a preacher talking in generalities and they think, wow, this is all about me. This resonates with me. And think about that phrase, oh, this resonates with me. That really resonated with me. That really, what you said back there, it really resonated with me. You think about that phrase, and what that essentially means is, I'm making it all about me. It's all about me. And we act like there's something wrong with that, making something all about you. When that's twisted and looked at from another way, it's like we see that as this horrible thing when you make something about you. All he does is make things about him. But that's, you know, things don't keep our attention or our interest when they're not about us. Yeah, we're interested in other people. We like to read history books. We like to read this. But even then, you know, the most I've ever gotten out of a history book or some sort of historical story, that's literally what history is, a historical story. It's when I can kind of relate it to my own life and my own experience and my own observations about the world that I'm living in. So even if you're reading history, you're kind of making it about you if it's going to have an impact. I think when someone says something resonates with them, it's this much more, you know, this candy-coated way of saying, you know, I'm making it about me. It's my ego here. My ego is absorbing this thing, and I'm thinking about myself. And again, though, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's how things impact us. We have to make them about us. And if we are going to make things about other people, if we are going to focus on other people, the only way that we can truly be sure that we are doing that in a good way, in a meaningful way, is if we've already focused on ourselves. Because if you haven't focused on yourself, how the fuck do you know that you're impacting other people in a meaningful and constructive way? You might have the best of intentions, but I think unless you've really looked at yourself, unless you've really gotten a hold of yourself, and who and what you are, you're not really going to know if you're helping other people. And you might very well be hurting them. So preach what you need. You know, preaching what you need is essentially entirely based on looking at yourself. It's looking at yourself and saying, I need this, and putting it to words and verbalizing it. And by verbalizing it, you're putting it into action, and you are reinforcing it if you've already started putting it into action. It's a mantra, essentially. I think preaching is in many ways a mantra. And if you've ever read any self-help or even New Age stuff, occult practices, a lot of different beliefs, and you know, even if it's not a belief, like I said, it could be just the most generic self-help, you know, how to make money, how to do this, or it could be some deeper occult practice. They'll tell you to put things into words, verbally, out loud, and that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. Like if you're reading a book and it says, now say these words aloud, think about your goals and say them aloud. I don't like that. You know, I've never been comfortable doing that. And if you do say it aloud, it doesn't feel right. There's not that conviction there. But I think a lot of those ideas, a lot of the ideas behind that are very true, and the more you say those things, the more conviction you end up having. And a lot of those practices will tell you, you have to say it over and over again. Because it's not fun to say something out loud for the first time and to hear your weak-willed voice say it. That's not fun. That doesn't make you feel like you're actually going to put something into action if you hear your own weak-willed voice. Your weak-willed voice. You heard of the World Wide Web? What about the weak-willed... I can't even say it anymore. It's a tongue twister. Your weak-willed voice. With so much of that, they tell you to verbalize it, and most mantras are based on that. Whether you're repeating it silently in your own head or whether you're saying it out loud, the idea is that the more you repeat it, the more it becomes your reality, the more it impacts your subconscious, and the more that it seeps into that subconscious, the more it's going to affect your everyday consciousness without you even trying. The whole point is to make it so you're no longer even trying. So in preaching what you need, preaching what you need, who let this horse in here? Who let Mr. Ed in here, man? In preaching what you need, you are making it more a part of your reality. And when it's part of your reality, you're essentially just an observer at that point. And in being an observer, you have conviction. You're no longer trying to force something. You're just describing something. Because there is no greater conviction, there is no greater expression of conviction than simply describing something. Explanations, no. When you're explaining something, you're like a fucking lawyer. Or worse, a defendant in court. But when you're describing something, you are just saying what you are seeing. Preaching what you need, saying what you are seeing, saying what you are experiencing or have experienced or hope to experience. And the reason why people have so much trouble with that, though, is that we project things onto other people. When someone is preaching what they need, we hear they're telling me what to do, even if they're not. Like I said, there are situations where people do talk down to you, they do single you out, they are talking directly to you, even passive-aggressively. There are times when people are speaking in generalities and being vague, but you know they're talking about you, or you think they are, because how do you ever really know? And this kind of goes back to that episode I did a couple episodes ago about the very dark and primitive face politics that were going on a week or two ago, where everyone was up in arms about this kid's face. When I see his face, I see this. I see every bully that ever stuffed me into a locker. You know, when I see his face, I just see a kid having a good time. You know, it's like everyone was like, had an opinion on this kid's face, and it felt like this dark, primitive regression as a species. But we do that a lot with faces. You know, it's not just kids who are involved in these public controversies, these public socio-political controversies, but we are constantly reading things into people's faces. I do it, you know, and that once again, what's funny about this show is I talk about a lot of things, and I've thought about this before, where if I were to listen to my show, I might think that I was just some extremely judgmental asshole. And I'm not saying I'm not, but if I were to listen, I'd be like, this guy just thinks everybody's always doing wrong, and he's on this pedestal where he just does everything right. And it couldn't be further from the truth. This show is the living embodiment of that epiphany of preaching what you need. The reason I do this is because these are things that I've had to deal with myself in most cases. Yeah, sometimes I'll comment on something I've just observed people doing. It's not always about my own experience. But so often, if I'm getting deep on something that we do, if I say we do or people do something, there's a strong chance that I myself have done that and felt myself doing that. And I've had to put measures in place to stop doing that because I don't think it's good. And there's a strong chance that even with those measures in place, I still find myself doing it. So I sure hope someone doesn't think that this show is just me preaching at people. This show is truly me preaching what I need most of the time. But with faces, you know, since I love to talk about faces so much, and there was that recent controversy revolving around people reading different things into this face, it's something that we do. Like, think about the song People Are Strange, the Doors song. That song talks about, you know, being when you're alone in a strange place and people's faces look sinister to you. If you're walking down a city street that's dark and you don't know the people and you're out of place, you don't know where you're going, so you're disoriented, and you see strangers' faces and they are not immediately friendly, you're going to see something sinister in those faces, whether there is something sinister or not. You're going to think people are out to get you. And we do that even with people we know. We do that even, it's not just strangers, you know, but even people we know, sometimes we'll look at their faces and think like, oh, I can't immediately read their expression, or they're not telling me exactly what it is they think. Therefore, they must be thinking about me. They must be judging me. Oh, look at my friend over there. He's not smiling. That must mean he hates me. You know, we have a tendency to do that. We have a tendency to see conspiracy where it doesn't exist. You know, you want to talk about conspiracy theories, just hang out with a group of friends. If you've ever had a social group, an established social group where there's kind of an interlocking network of relationships, of friendships, there are so many fucking conspiracy theories about everyone else in the group. Even if everybody ultimately gets along, even if the friendships aren't toxic, there's still this element of conspiracy theory, like, oh, those people are doing this. Oh, they went and did that without us. Oh, you know, I have this memory of being in school. This shows you how early it starts. I was in, I think, fifth grade, and two friends of mine, we had this like free day in class. It was like probably toward the end of the year, and we were just all screwing around, like a class party. I don't remember exactly what it was, but two of my friends were kind of like whispering to each other throughout the class. And at one point, they went to the bathroom together. They left and went to the bathroom. And another friend of mine, he was very self-conscious. You know, he had a lot of issues. He came up to me and he said, hey Eric. You know, so-and-so and so-and-so just went to the bathroom together. Can you go follow them and listen to what they're saying? I know they're talking about me. I know they're talking about me. And they might have been. You know, they might have been talking about him, or they might have been talking about me, or they might have been, you know, talking about someone else, or they might have been making some weird inside joke. They might have been planning a prank. They, you know, knowing my group of friends at that age, you know, 11, 12-year-old boys, they could have been doing anything. They could have been, they very well could have been talking shit. You know, we talked a lot of shit. I was privy to that. I was a participant in talking shit about other friends of mine. For whatever reason, you know, friends have conversations about friends that aren't always nice, or they make fun of friends. But those two guys, they very well might have been talking shit about one of their friends, this kid, me, someone else. They might have been talking about some inside joke based on a movie. Who knows what the fuck they were talking about? But this other friend of mine was just convinced. He was paranoid and convinced that they were talking about him, even though he had no reason to believe that. And it's sort of like seeing, you know, someone's face and just automatically assuming they have it out for you. You're walking down a street and you see someone who looks mean. Oh, they must hate me. You know, it was the same exact idea. You see two friends whispering, having a private conversation. I bet it's about me. Oh, you're talking about me over there? So there's a lot of that projection. And like I said, I'm not even saying it's completely unfounded. I'm not saying, you know, the reason why I think we worry about that is because we know it's a possibility, and maybe we've experienced people doing things to us or plotting against us in small and big ways. You know, that's a reality that we have to deal with. But I think you have to remember that it's not always the case. And just because someone else is telling you what to do half the time, you know, you grow up being told what to do, your teachers and your parents and God knows who else, God himself. You're lucky if God is actually telling you what to do. If you can actually hear God giving you instructions, consider yourself lucky. Maybe. Maybe. I think there are some unlucky people who receive direct instruction from God, too. But anyway, you know, you're so used to people judging you and criticizing you and telling you what's right that, of course, when you hear it, when you hear somebody, you know, preaching something, when you hear someone sharing some idea that they have conviction in, of course, you're going to possibly take it the wrong way. You know, I would say try not to do that as a default unless you actually have a reason to believe that they are speaking directly to you, unless they say your name. But mantras are real. Mantras do impact how we feel. about things. Like I was saying, when you repeat something to yourself enough, it seeps into your subconscious, and then, you know, it's kind of a weird system, because it's, you repeat something to yourself, whether you say it out loud or silently, it doesn't really matter. But it's essentially your outer consciousness is communicating it to your subconscious, and then your subconscious then excretes it out again back into your outer conscious, but on a much deeper, more subliminal level that influences your life more, that allows you to make better decisions and allows you to feel better on a deeper level. So it's just this weird system where it comes from one place, it goes into this other place, and then it comes out again in the original place again, but as a part of your foundation. And I'm learning how to put things into words, and I think in doing this show, it's a way of taking subliminal ideas, of taking things that have entered my subconscious and putting them into words. And I think one of the reasons why this show itself is beneficial to me, why I'm preaching what I need, is because... because I don't know. No, it is because I don't really like to just say things to myself. As much as I like to make little jokes, or I do talk to myself, God knows I talk to myself, but I don't like just to repeat mantras out loud. Like, you're a strong woman, and nobody's going to hold you down, and you're gonna get the job of your dreams as a business executive. You know, I don't like to say things like that out loud. So having an outlet, a creative outlet like this, is a great way to do that. It's kind of my way of getting around, you know, getting around the fact that I don't want to just look in the mirror and repeat shit. Just to go back to the face thing one more time, one last time about that face thing. I do carry with me a certain face. I try to look like an unfriendly stranger sometimes when I'm out in the world, because there is a chance that people could bother you. People can accost you, ask you for things you don't want to give them. And depending on where you are, too. About a month ago, I was walking. It was just after New Year's, and I was walking home from the store, kind of by this dark park. A dark park, that sounds good. This is Dark Park. It was Dark Park, and it's where junkies hang out, and I was walking by that, and it was nighttime, and by this kind of, you know, low-income apartment building. You know, nothing against the people who live there, but I am going to carry with myself, you know, a slightly more stern, stoic face cutting through there. And experience has taught me that it's better to do that. But as I was walking along the sidewalk there near the edge of the park, I saw a guy, and he looked sketchy. You know, he was walking toward me, and he kind of was veering. You know, here's something I will say, speaking of preaching what you need, is that there should be a system to how you walk on the sidewalk. I stick to one side of the sidewalk. In my opinion, the same rules that apply to the road, at least in the United States, apply to the sidewalk. You should stick to the right side of the sidewalk, just like you drive in the right lane. And you pass people in the same way if it's a crowded sidewalk. If there are a lot of people around, you don't go onto the left side of the sidewalk, you don't go on the center, you stick to the right. And if everybody followed that system, first of all, we'd never have to play that stupid fucking game where it's like, I'm going to go this way and you're going to go that way. Oh, we're both on the same side of the sidewalk. Let's do that dance where we both like, oh, I'll go this way. Oh, now you're going that way. Oh, you go. You know, that's just the most humiliating thing you can do, is to play that game with people where you both get stuck going the same direction on a sidewalk, and you go this way and they go that way. It's just the worst. So by sticking to the right side of the sidewalk, you will never have to play that stupid game with people. And so that's what I was doing in this instance. And this guy started to veer toward me, and I was just like, what's this guy doing? And I didn't look at him. I didn't look him in the eye. I kept my face straight ahead. And I probably looked pretty intimidating, you know, and I have a rule about that. It's going to take forever to tell this little story that's not important, but what else is new? I have a rule when I'm out in the world, and that's that I would rather look more dangerous and more intimidating than other people in certain situations, because I know what I am capable of. I know that I'm not going to do anything dangerous. I know I'm not threatening. So if I appear more threatening or more intimidating all the power to me because I know what my limitations are. If somebody else seems more threatening or intimidating than me, I don't want that because I don't know what their limitations are. And a great example of that is if somebody is behind me for too long, and this hasn't happened that many times, it's not like this is a regular occurrence, but if I'm walking somewhere where there aren't that many people, and you know, I'm going somewhere very specific, like my house, and I find that some guy's been behind me for way too long, I've actually taken a sidestep and turned my body, you know, horizontally or perpendicular. I don't know what the fucking word is. I've turned my body and just let them pass and kind of watched them pass by me so that they are now in front of me. And that probably comes across really scary to them if they're not up to any bad shit. They probably think, like, what the fuck is this guy doing stepping off to the side and watching me pass and then walking behind me? Like, is this guy going to mug me? Is he doing some reversal of the normal mugger routine where the mugger's ahead of me and then he like does a U-turn and follows me? You know, I don't know what they're thinking, but in that situation, I've known I'm not going to do any shit. I might seem kind of intimidating right now, just stepping off to the side and letting them pass, but I know my own limits, so I'm going to take control here rather than constantly looking behind my shoulder at whoever's walking behind me. And of course, I'll never do that if it's a woman walking behind me. Of course, I'll never do that if it's like a little kid. Not that that's ever happened. This little kid's been following me for the last hour. This kid's been behind me for 12 blocks. But, you know, if it's a woman, I'm not going to worry. You know, I mean, people want to act like men and women are the exact same. I'll tell you what, that's a great example where if a woman's behind me for a little too long, I'm not going to be that worried. And God knows I'm not going to step off to the side so that she can pass me and I can now be behind her, you know, like I'm not going to do that to her. Whereas if it's a guy, absolutely, I'll have no reservation doing that. But anyway, to get back to my original story, it was just the rules of the sidewalk. The rules of the sidewalk, I should write that, because I've never heard people talk about that. I've never heard people talk about the fact that there should be, and in my opinion, are, unspoken rules of the sidewalk. You follow the same rules that the flow of traffic follows. You pass people in the same way. If you're clinging to the right side of the sidewalk and someone's walking faster than you, they can pass you on the left and then they can return back to the right side of the sidewalk. And if you're walking with a group of people and you're doing that thing where you horizontally take up the entire sidewalk, you should be looking behind you constantly to make sure that a runner, a jogger, someone who walks faster than you isn't being blocked. And if someone's approaching from the front, and you're walking in a horizontal line with friends, and you see that person approaching, you should drop into single file to let them pass. And a lot of people don't do that. They'll like barely give you enough room. It'll be like three people taking up the entire sidewalk horizontally, talking about their lives or whatever the fuck people do, walking horizontally down a sidewalk. And they'll just like sometimes not even give you room to pass. And you end up bumping shoulders with them, and that's, you know, awful. You end up, like, brushing up against a stranger, which is weirdly confrontational. I've never been in a fight because of it, but it's always awkward. So, you know, the second you see someone approaching, and if you're in a horizontal line, you got to drop into single file, man. There are rules to walking on the sidewalk. But anyway, back to my original story was just that this guy was approaching in a dark, kind of seedy area, and he was veering on my side. Of course, I was on the right side of the sidewalk. You got to pick a side if you're on that sidewalk, boy. And he was veering toward me, and so I put on the most intimidating glow I could, but I didn't look at him. I didn't do anything to try to be confrontational. And then as he passed, he kind of veered in front of me and cut into the apartment complex, which is why he was veering. I don't think he was trying to fuck with me. But he still should have known that he was cutting it a little bit close. And as he did, he said, "Happy New Year." Like, almost, like, I don't even know what he was going for, you know. He definitely said it because I looked like a jerk or I looked intimidating. So he was kind of trying to be like, well, you know, your face. That was essentially what he was saying. He wasn't happy with my face. He saw an unfriendly stranger's face. But, you know, he was veering into my lane, man. He was veering into my lane. And, you know, it's not that I want to come across as unfriendly to strangers or anything like that. But I definitely saw where this guy, he was paying way too much attention to my face. He was reading into my face in a way that I didn't intend. I don't know, maybe I did. A bad story. That's just a bad story. But either way, it just shows you the way we see people. And you hear it too with people who feel like they have been discriminated against. And I'm not saying people aren't discriminated against, but we've all heard stories where someone says, like, someone treated me this way. Oh, that guy looked at me this way because I'm a woman. Or that woman looked at me this way because I'm a man. And they, you know, clearly were judging me because I'm a man. You know, we hear people say things like that, and it's just the most anecdotal evidence. It's the most circumstantial situation you can imagine. You don't know what that person was thinking. You see someone, and like they just happen to look unfriendly for a split second, whether they intended that or not, and you have a tendency to read in. It's not just, oh, that person looked at me in an unfriendly way. We also add in this element of they looked at me in an unfriendly way because I know exactly what they were thinking. It's like if I happen to walk by a playground and like some moms kind of watch me walk by, they think I'm a pedophile. What the fuck is the problem with them moms over there? They think I'm a freaking pedophile. I know they're looking at me that way because I'm a pedophile, because I am, Jesus. There's a tendency to do that. It's like, oh, they're saying, and then if someone verbalizes something, we do it too. And that gets back to what I mean about taking things the wrong way when someone is simply preaching what they need. They're saying that because they want to, you know, criticize me. I don't know. But speaking of preaching what you need, that's kind of the core of the whole sidewalk etiquette that I was talking about, the rules of the sidewalk. I am preaching what I need. The reason why I am so opinionated about how sidewalk etiquette should work, is because I myself have learned that through experience. I've learned what works and doesn't work on the sidewalk. So when I go on a rant about how to properly walk on the sidewalk, I am preaching what I need. And in preaching that, it's a good reminder. If I didn't preach about sticking to the right side of the sidewalk, I bet I'd forget. And then I'd have to do that little dance with people where we both go in the same direction and you know, we both look like freaking monkeys, you know? If I didn't continually preach the rules of the sidewalk to myself above all else, I would forget to follow them. Maybe. Maybe at this point, the rules of the sidewalk are so ingrained in my subconscious that I would just do it naturally. I don't know. But I think the sidewalk rules are a great example of me preaching what I need. It's not all philosophical. A lot of it's very practical. And it's really how we change our behavior, you know, without preaching what you need, whether you say it out loud or not. It's how you change what you do. You create little rules for yourself.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me.